I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. We may not have a quorum now, but we'll start. Soon as we get a quorum, we can move the minutes. The first bill up is House File 3310, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have a bill.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
You don't have anyone to move the bill? I'll move the bill.
That would be good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House File 3110, be recommended to pass and return to Finance.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3310 is a bill that deals with tax compliance in relating to unpaid motor vehicle taxes and motor vehicle crimes. And with me is Matt Hodapp, who has been working on this issue in the past. Members, you also have two letters of support, one from the Minnesota Auto Dealers and from the Transportation Alliance. Basically, we want to make certain that we are collecting the money that we are rightfully due here in Minnesota. We've been working on tax compliance in other areas, and this is just another area. So I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Hodapp.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hodapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Matt Hodapp. I'm a 28-year trooper with Minnesota State Patrol. I am currently a sergeant assigned to the State Patrol's Vehicle Crime Task Force. You might say I am the Vehicle Crimes Task Force, as there's only one of us left on the committee that, or the force that was developed by the chair in 1998. We have our unit typically investigates or gets tips on several hundred motor vehicle crime, typically felony level crimes. But when it comes to the foreign state registration, which is one of our main areas that we look at, that are those folks that are living in the state of Minnesota, yet registering their vehicles in other states. We've got them registering in Oregon, the Dakotas, in Wisconsin, our bordering states, primarily because the registration fees there are less expensive. We also deal in dealer fraud investigations. And some of that is centered on the registration taxes and title fees that we attempt to get recaptured back for the Trunk Highway Fund as well.
Mr. Hodapp, could I ask a question? Apparently some of the fraud issues that are in the courts now were based on your fraud investigations. Is that correct with some of the automotive dealers? Could you identify them or not?
Mr. Chair, at this time, I prefer not. They're okay. Currently under investigation.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to let the committee know that in the past, this organization has generated revenue, and we are looking at this as a tax compliance issue. We want to make sure those that are entitled or that need to pay actually do, in fact, pay.
I don't believe any questions. If not, Representative Hillstrom. There's a question on lines 3.6 to 3.8. Could you check that? About the fiscal implications on that 3.6 and 3.8, would you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, yes, I'll comment. We may change the number or the makeup to make certain that this is profitable. We want to make certain that, in fact, we're generating more revenue than we are, in fact, spending, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, based on the fiscal notes, you are generating more money.
We are in subsequent years, Mr. Chair, and we may need to work out the phase-in for this year to make certain that we don't spend more than we generate.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have the fiscal note.
If you're looking in your packet, we don't have the fiscal note. It's being developed as a change. Any questions of the author?
Mr. Chair, I get...
Representative Beard.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I was a little active here when we first started. First of all, what's the recommendation on this bill? Where is it going from here?
Back to Finance, Representative Beard.
Okay. And then, Trooper Hodup, where has the unit gone in number of investigators? Did you say it was down to one today, and where did it start? How's the decline been on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, originally in 1998, it started out as a pilot project of four troopers. Four, yes, sir. It maintained four. I got on the team replacing the first retiree in 2002. And then in 2005, we had two troopers retire, and they've not been replaced. And then again, a year and a half ago, I lost my last partner to retirement. So we've been at one for the last year and a half.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Haddup, has it been your experience over the, and you may not know the answer to this, but your experience over the years, the 10, 12 years we've had the unit, has it always found compliance to exceed its expenses?
Mr. Haddup.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, the compliance piece initially started out, if you recall, back in the day when the registration fees finally dropped under Governor Ventura to a $99 flat. Mm-hmm. Now that it's going back, we're seeing more violations along the foreign state registration.
Okay.
We also deal in dealer fraud investigation, yeah, auto theft investigation, and other felony-level motor vehicle crimes.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the dealer non-compliance and fraud was the one I was most interested in, because I think that's where we've had the most mischief that's had the biggest impact to the revenue stream. And just to be clear, I don't think it's good for us ever to do something just because it has a positive cash flow, but because there's always a policy and respect for the law that we're concerned of as well, and that's very valuable to us as a society. But this is helpful for us to remember. One follow-on question occurred to me. Is it possible that this could come out of the existing trooper contingent, and I don't remember how many hundred that is now, or is it important that we hire new troopers or move people, new people into the system to do this?
Mr. Hoda.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I believe that Major Tuckner might be able to better explain the administration's position on the staffing level.
Mm-hmm.
If I could turn that over to her.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Michelle Tuckner, State Patrol. Mr. Chair, representatives, the previous staffing of troopers that were allocated basically were assigned to operational duties in the field, and at this point, to reduce those numbers to put them into this vehicle crimes task force would result in other problems for us out there.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, I remember how the governor feels about additional troopers. I remember my little 2 a.m. bar bill that had 40 troopers attached to it, I think, somehow. I think you were there for that one, too. Good thing. I don't have any more questions at the moment. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a couple of questions regarding, first of all, how did you come up with the number of 8? And then how did you come up with, you know, your estimated, how are they basing the payback on this? Is it a, one trooper is expected to produce so many dollars in recovered funds, or if you could speak to that.
Representative Hilster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to start, I made up 8 because I didn't know where to start, but I needed to get a fiscal note. And so I'm flexible with working at what number it needs to be in order to actually have a positive generation. But we've been talking about tax compliance in all other areas, and this is the one area that was missing. And so as soon as I had something drafted, then I was able to get the department to do a fiscal note so that we could figure out where we were, because tax compliance in this area is equally important to all the other areas.
Representative Scott.
Yes, if I may. Does the patrol support this initiative?
Mr. Chair, members, the agency is neutral on this bill.
Any further questions? Representative Hoberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the State Patrol, when is the last time, if you know, that the Minnesota State Patrol contacted the state of Wisconsin, asked for a list of all vehicle registrations with Minnesota zip codes?
Mr. Hodapp.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoberg, it's been a few years. It's been probably 4 years, I'm guessing.
Any further questions? If not, I'll renew the motion that House File 3310 be recommended to pass and sent to Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
House File 3310 is passed and will be sent to Finance. Thank you. We do have a quorum. Would someone care to move the minutes that looked at it? Representative Reinert moves the minutes of, what was it? Forgot the
name. Rutman and Beer.
10th?
16th.
Of the, Representative Reinert moves the minutes of March 16th. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary? The minutes are approved. We do have a quorum, as you were well aware, but I wanted to make an announcement. While we have a lot of members here, I know you have to move back and forth. Apparently next week our schedules will change because we can't have any afternoon committee hearings. So we're trying to determine when we can have the committee hearings. In many cases, the session may start at 10:30 and probably have caucus at 10. So we're kind of in a squeeze for a time element. I prefer not to have meetings in the evening, and I think that's would be your preference. We have a number of bills, and definitely I think we can dispense those bills in one meeting unless we get some more referrals. But that's basically, you should be aware of it, that watch your emails as far as the time and place. The difficulty comes in getting a room to have the committee meetings, because a lot of committees do have morning meetings. So I just wanted to make you aware that there'll be a change, and we do have some bills left. The next bill is House File 2848, Representative Hortman.
Apparently, it's just not as needed.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 28 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Hortman moved House File 2848 is before us. My understanding is not a fiscal note required.
Mr. Chair, I am not certain whether this bill has to go back to finance because it came from finance or whether it can go to the General Register.
It has to go to finance.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2848 comes out of a recognition of the fact that we don't have enough money dedicated to improving railroad grade crossings. When we discussed the Minnesota Department of Transportation's bonding recommendations and then the amount that the governor recommended and then the amount that this committee recommended, the department had recommended $10 million to make safety improvements for railroad grade crossings. The governor and we agreed to fund only $2.5 million of that request. So that left a lot of unmet need in terms of improving the safety at railroad crossings. And I believe that it's very important that we take care of the safety issues on our transportation system ahead of everything else. And so we looked for a way to increase money dedicated to railroad crossing safety improvements. And one of the tools available to us is there is already a fund that takes some of the traffic fines and forfeited bail money, and a portion of it is dedicated to improving grade crossings, and this would increase the amount from $600,000 to $1 million. And supporting the bill are the townships and the cities, and there's somebody here from MnDOT to speak to the bill as well.
Representative Hortman, specific to the financial fiscal notes, we don't need a lot of time as far as support of the bill and policy. And would you identify your first testifier?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sewell, I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and we are here to support the bill. It's a revenue-neutral way of getting funding to our rural railroad crossings primarily, a lot of them that are too small to qualify for the bonding dollars that Representative Portman mentioned. This is a way to help create flexibility. It's taking undedicated funds and making it part of the dedicated pot that already exists. But in our discussions with MnDOT, it's a way to do it without shorting any other existing project.
Were there any questions of the testifier or Representative Hortman? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question isn't directly to this bill, but we seem to be sending these bills that take money from the Trunk Highway Fund separately to the floor one by one. So we just saw one leave here that, what was it, 700 and some thousand. This one we're going with 400,000. I mean, the cumulative effect of this is that, you know, we have things planned to be built and money to be distributed, and so I'm just wondering, historically we've had like a finance bill where we'd put these together so we could weigh out the highest priority and what, how much money in total we wanted to transfer from these dedicated funds for roads for other purposes. And so I just a question of you as far as how is this going to be handled?
Representative Holberg, we were going to lay this over, and I was going to ask her before we vote on it, if it were to pass, to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Other than that, it would go to the Finance Committee, and I presume they should be looking at that also.
Okay, and maybe if I can just make a request, then we prepare our omnibus bill. Could it be possible for staff to provide with us the dollar amount in the bills that have already moved to the floor and how much they would take out of the trunk highway fund so that we can keep that in mind as we put together and consider things that are being held over?
I'm sure we can do that. Ms. Soares, we can do that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
I could just respond to that. I don't know what the committee's preferences, but I would like the bill to move by itself to finance so that we have the option later on if there's a lot of controversy and whatever becomes our omnibus bill. I know that tax compliance piece, if it's in there, maybe becomes a train wreck. And it just seems like to me I would like the committee to vote on sending this bill by itself with the understanding that the content would likely be included in this committee's omnibus bill. But if that should crash and burn at some later date because of something that's in it that I didn't author, I'd like to have my bill in a place where I could keep moving it.
Representative Hartman, I want to ask Ms. Soares. Ms. Soares, you indicated it may not need a fiscal note. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, I didn't request a fiscal note on the bill because the changes in the revenue are evident. It's a $400,000 additional to the Minnesota grade crossing safety account in the special revenue fund, and then $400,000 less to the trunk highway fund. And last year, the trunk highway fund received $4.1 million from these fines, and so there's more than the $400,000 deposited in the trunk highway fund from this. So the trunk highway fund would feel the full loss.
You have another testifier?
Mr. Chair, MnDOT would just like to say a quick word about the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Susan Aylesworth, and I work in the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations at MnDOT in the rail section. And I'm not here to support or oppose this bill. I'm just here to provide some very brief information about what we do with this money so you have an understanding. This money allows us to address highway rail grade crossing issues immediately. Federal funds require programming at 5 years in advance. So when a problem arises, we're able to immediately respond at a location. But more importantly, it allows us to fund many small improvements and save the taxpayers a lot of money. At the average grade crossing costs about $200,000. We can improve lighting at crossings. We can improve we can improve alignments at crossings at much lower cost and make that crossing a lot safer. So this is our low cost, no cost program. And if there are any questions about that, I would be happy to answer them.
Any questions as a testifier? Not. Thank you. The members of the committee, is there an objection to sending the bill to finance? Representative Holberg, do you?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not my objection to do that, and I certainly have had my horror stories with omnibus bills and trying to get little two-word bills passed for years. Not that I'm talking about anything specific, but I do think that, I mean, past chairs have been very concerned about what we lovingly refer to as leakage in these funds, i.e. money being spent in other areas besides roads and trying to keep a handle on that. So I have no objection to it moving separately, but I think we as committee members need to keep an eye on how much we're taking away from the trunk highway fund by all of these little bills. Because certainly we all know there's no general fund money, so these dedicated funds have become very attractive for additional spending in various areas.
Representative Holbrook, I've been cognizant of that, and I'm concerned that we can spend, but nobody wants to raise, and that's really why I'm glad you mentioned that, too. But we've been kind of watching it, but at this point, I assume some of that should be picked up in finance, too, but we're going to be tracking that. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would renew my motion, and I would assure the members of the committee that I will not move this bill individually if we do have a successful omnibus bill, but it'll just remain parked. So I renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman renews her motion that House File 2848 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Contrary. House File 2848 recommended to pass and sent to Finance. Thank you. The next bill is House File 3029. Representative Hortman.
Thank you.
This one goes to Finance also. Is that what you're going to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a department bill from the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And Gene Halverson is here from MnDOT to explain the bill. There is a...
There's an amendment.
An A2 amendment in your packet, and that conforms House File 3029 to the changes that were adopted in the Senate. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
House File A2 amendment's been moved. All in favor say aye.
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 The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gene Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Halverson. For the record, Gene Halverson from Minnesota DOT. This bill is basically a cleanup bill. Over the last few years, actually going back, there are changes going back to 1980 in here. So over those years, there have been changes made in trucking regulations. And now there needs to be some cleanup in here. A large portion of this bill, many of the sections you will see where a statute number 169822 is deleted and 169823 is substituted. And that's the only reason for that is 822 used to have weights mentioned in that section of statute. It no longer does. 822 is now only have dimensions or definitions, I'm sorry. And 823 has those weights that used to be in 822. So you'll see that over and over and over throughout the bill. Probably the first big change is in Section 2, and that's brakes on implements of husbandry. It doesn't require implements that prior to this didn't have to have brakes to have brakes. What it does is require... Actually, last year when we changed it to meet the breakaway brake law that reduced it from 6,000-pound requirement to 3,000-pound requirement, when drafting this, basically I messed it up. And Mr. Burris found the error, and this section would correct that. The next section, there is a change in a length to 97 feet for saddle mounts, and all that does is make our statute compatible with the federal regulation. Saddle mounts is the way that they deliver new trucks. They're too big to be hauled on car carriers like other vehicles, so one truck is mounted on a saddle on the back of the other truck, and you actually tow four of them that way, and they're delivered to the dealerships from the manufacturers. So those are saddle mounts, and it just increases the length to meet the federal regs. In Section 4, which is the axle weight chart, there's a couple changes there. If you look in the three-axle column, the weight for all trucks except those that were manufactured prior to August 1st, 1981, should be 34,000 for the spacing of 7 feet and 8 feet. If you look on the towards the end of that section, it indicates that it's for those trucks manufactured before August 1st, 91. So eventually, that increased weight will go away, and it'll all be uniform at 34,000 for those tandem axle weights on that group. There's some renumbering that goes on in Section 5. Section 6, and you'll see this several times in there, in a couple of our permits, it allows some increased weights for trucks that have six axles or at 90,000 pounds or 97,000 pounds on seven-axle trucks. We had to put "or more" in here because somebody took it literally to mean you had to only have six axles. That isn't what it's trying to say. It's trying to say you can haul increased weights if you add more axles. And so it should be six or more axles, seven or more axles. We don't care if you have more axles. It's just that you have at least six axles or seven axles to use that permit that allows increased weights for ag products and for timber products. There's a section in here that mentions the Trunk Highway 36, and that's based on the change last year that allows increased length on the St. Croix River Bridge. Actually, it decreases the length, I should say, by 20 feet to 55 feet. If you want to exceed that 55 feet, you have to buy a permit. So far, we've issued 13 of those permits, so it hasn't been a real big bunch of trucks trying to use the Stillwater Bridge. But all this section does is make it clear in the permit section of Statute 169.86 that there is a permit for that. One of the changes here is in the farm equipment one. There was a little bit of controversy to begin with that. And it's about buying a permit to move farm equipment, mainly bought by implement dealers. And there was two permits there. And what we've been trying to do over the last few years is places where we have like permits that can be combined into one permit. We've done that. Last year we did the hay, straw, and corn stock bales. There were three different ones. We combined them into one. This is about farm implements and moving of farm implements with a permit over dimension. There was a $24 permit that allowed 14.0 wide, and then there was a $120 permit that allowed 14.6 wide, 14.0 high, and 85 long, which was an increase of 10 feet in length. And so it added some additional dimensional room here for these dealers to haul this bigger equipment. The $120 permit, you can make as many trips as you want in a year. So in some cases, for some of these dealers, they get it down to a dollar or even less per trip, depending on how many they make. The $24 permit has been there since 1980. It's never increased. The dealerships at first thought that this was going to be too big an increase for them. However, when the director of the association polled his membership, they decided that the increased dimensions was worth the extra $96 a year for the permit. And this actually gives us a fiscal note of an increase to the Trunk Highway Fund of estimated $22,000. And the only way we could estimate that was take the number of permits we issued last year for this category and multiply it times the $96 increase. And that's how we came up with the 20-some thousand dollars. But there's really no other way for us to know for sure how much that will be, because we never know how many permits are going to get issued or purchased. In Section 8, I have this one here.
Our sections are a little off because he's tracking the Senate language, and we adopted an amendment that has some of the Senate language in it. So I'm trying to find the, what he's talking about now is our Section 9 on page 6 of the A2 amendment.
Okay. We changed the bales last year, as I had said, and what we did was we allowed them to operate on the interstate. And prior to that, they had not been able to do that. Well, when you start moving hay during drought periods of time from Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, and you're moving it to the Dakotas where it's needed, the key highways there are our I-90, I-94. Well, they were prohibited based on some law that had been there for a long time in Minnesota statute. In checking with the Federal Highway Administration, they did not have a problem with increasing the width as long as we did it with a permit. And so we now allow them to operate on the interstate. But what happened there is we reduced the height from 15 feet to 14 and a half feet because in the metro interstate system of I-35E and W and 494, 694, we have a large number of bridges that won't allow 15-foot high loads to go in there. We allow, when we talk about a 15-foot load, we require a 15-6 space in there because we want a 6-inch margin. You know, at 70 miles an hour or 55 miles an hour, 6 inches isn't very much. So that's the reason for it. Well, what happened is a constituent of yours, actually, Mr. Leader, hey, called me, and he had a problem because he was 14.8 and he got stopped at the scale. Nothing had changed. He was using the same truck. He was using the same baler, the same configuration, but he was 2 inches over. And so what this would do is allow 15 feet on all the other highways, but on the metro interstate highways that won't accommodate 15, it would be reduced to 14 and a half there. So 14.6 on the metro interstates, 15 on all their other highways, and that would take care of his and I'm sure some other people's situation.
Thank you, Mr. Alverson. That was a question I was going to ask because I noticed in one part it said 13.6. And were implements of husbandry, but it's actually 15 now on the rural or rural interstate, and or 15 in the metro and 15 and a half.
No, Mr. Chairman, it's for hay and straw and
right,
cornstalk
and straw
bales, either round or square. Now It would allow 15.0 on all other highways, other than the metro interstates. The metro interstate highways would be at 14 feet 6
okay.
inches. In doing that, I also found that in Section E of that, we had failed to get rid of where it talked about round bales. We don't care if it's round bales or square bales, as long as they fall within the dimensions. And we also don't care if it's hay, straw, or cornstalk bales. Bales a bale, same sizes, as long as they fall within the dimensions, it really doesn't matter. So that's the other change there in that section. In my section 12, there's a permit fee change, and it's because the Blandon, some years ago, Blandon came and needed to get a permit to haul twin trailers of paper from Grand Rapids to the Port of Duluth.
Okay, hold on a sec. This is on your page 9. It's your section 7.
This one.
Actually, your
there's
section 8.
Section 7.
Your section 8 on page 9 of the bill.
What the legislature did is said, yes, on twin trailers with 8 axles, you can haul 108,000 pounds on selected routes, two routes, either Highway 169 or Highway 53 to the Port of Duluth. And for that amount, the fee would be $850. What Blandon did a couple years ago is came in and asked for the same weights that raw paper or raw timber products and raw egg products are operating under, 90,000 on 6 axles, 97,000 on 7 axles. And what they've chosen to do is haul, they've actually permitted 4 trucks, 97,000 on 7 axles. And because of the fees, the only fee we had in that section was $850. We had to charge them $850. When the fee should be, to be consistent with the other products, $300 for the 90,000-pound permit or $500 for the 97,000-pound permit. So it's just a fairness issue. You know, if this passes and when they renew their permits, their annual permit for the next year, we would end up charging those 97,000-pound trucks $500 for the permit. Per truck.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Have you completed your testimony, Mr. Halverson?
Not quite, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, just to that point, though, as I'm reading this, the fee is $850, and then is this $500 replacing the $850, or is it an addition to the $850?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the $850 would be for the twin trailers if they chose to haul twin trailers, twin 28.5s on 8 axles.
Okay.
Which they've assured me they don't want to do that, but it would still be there if they did. And I think they've chosen to operate with these, you know, two-unit vehicle, a tractor and a trailer at 97,000 pounds.
Okay. So I understand, Mr. Chairman, that's the fee for the trailers. This other fee is for the 97,000 limit, then the 500. Excuse me, the 500.
Mr. Helper.
I think I've got it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, these are not registration weights. They still have to register their trucks with the Department of Public Safety. These are permits that allow increased weights to be hauled.
Yeah.
Actually, they're increased gross weights. They're actually less weight on per axle.
Yeah.
So. Mr. Chairman, there's another important part in here, and it's it's actually going to show up in my Section 15, Special Permit Violations.
This would be on the A2 Amendment, page 6, Section 14.
In Minnesota, we have civil penalties for overweight loads. And currently, the statute allows a different rate of penalty if you exceed your permit. And it mentions Chapter 169.86, which is where most of our permits are at. And have been for many, many years. And that's at 5 cents a pound for the weight of the violation that exceeds your permit. Unfortunately, over the last few years, we've added some permits, the ag permit, the timber permit, canola, a couple other ones, and they end up in different statute numbers, 169.864, 865, 866. And so the State Patrol, when they do civil weight enforcement, have not been able to use that 5 cents a pound in civil weight penalty for permit violation. What they've had to do is use the standard civil weight penalty. And I just calculated out the difference here. On a 90,000 pound, a truck with a 90,000 pound permit, if they exceeded by 4,000 pounds, under the current law, the way it is, that would cost $2,010 in a civil penalty. The way it should read, and if a contractor, for instance, hauled the same 94,000 pounds on a 90,000 pound permit, like say for instance a Cat D, you know, dozer, he would pay $200. So 200 versus a little over $2,000. So here again, it's a fairness issue, and I think it's the proper way to do it, because if you look at it, the person has already had to register his truck for that 90,000 pounds, pay about $500 difference, and he's had to buy a permit for another $300. So he's already paid an additional $800, and now to be, you know, fined more than what the person hauling construction equipment doesn't really make much sense, I believe. So that's the reason for that change. There's just one exception over in Chapter 221, and it's because an exception got placed in there for inner city or trucks operating entirely within corporate limits was put in there when it should not have, and it throws it out of compliance with the federal regs on that. And then in the repealer section, there's one section being repealed that is for a permit that we have never used, and it's because spring load restrictions, the zones are now been taken out of statute and they're set in policy by MnDOT's materials lab. And so that permit has never been issued, and we don't feel there's any need for it any longer because the statute changed. And then if you notice in the repealer section, there's a whole list of obsolete rules that are being cleaned out of the rules. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
And any questions? Mr. Halverson or the author? If not, thank you, Mr. Halverson. Representative Hortman, I presume if you want to renew your motion that House File 3029 is amended, be recommended to pass and sent to return to Finance.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd renew that motion.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. House File 3029 is passed and sent to return to Finance.
Mr. Chair, I think the next bill you have on the agenda is my bill, House File 605, but I have an amendment being drafted by the reviser right now that may not be ready for members, so we should probably go to the next bill on the list and come back to 605.
Okay.
I think maybe more people will want copies than me.
Would Representative Swales be ready if we move her up?
Yes.
Representative Swales, do you have an amendment or not?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's being passed out right now. It's the H3506DE2. There was a mistake made on the previous amendment, so the page copied quickly the correct one.
Representative Swales, do you want to move your bill and bring it before the committee? Where is that going?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 3506 and have it sent or
return
relayed over. I'm sorry?
Return to Finance.
Return to Finance. Thank you, Mr.
Back. Chair. You want to explain? We'd like to stick to the fiscal portion, Representative Swale.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Essentially, what we have here is a law on the books that no longer works, and the fact that it doesn't has serious implications for counties all over the state. The understanding was that with the state takeover of the judiciary, that the state would assume financial responsibility for operations and that the county would carry out the functions. Given the current conditions of the state's finances, this partnership no longer exists as it was contemplated, and county property taxpayers are taking a beating across the board. This bill, as amended, will restore some fairness and will reward desired behavior. I have sitting next to me my favorite sheriff in the entire state, Sheriff Bill Hutton from Washington County, and I would like for him to explain how the law distorts enforcement and the consequences of that effect.
Representative Swale, do you want to move your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE2 amendment to put the bill into the shape we'd like it.
Representative Swales moves the DE2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Okay, the amendment is adopted.
All right. I'd like to introduce Sheriff Hutton.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm Bill Hutton, Sheriff of Washington County, and we've been dealing with this for quite a while. I'm also in the position now with the current economic state to decide whether or not I'm able to continue with the programs of size and weights within Washington County. I'm making some tough decisions as a sheriff as to what programs we need to cut and also protect the citizens of Washington County. As a result of the law the way it is now, the sheriff's office and or county government is not able to collect any fines, civil fines that are imposed as a result of this. If we, the sheriffs of Minnesota, are able to collect those fines, civil penalties, if you will, we will be able to protect the roads or the county roads, especially for me, interest is Washington County. As you're aware, because each of you represent different districts in the state, the expense that goes into each of the counties to protect those roads and or to repair the damages, and we unfortunately are having individuals out there driving overweight causing significant damage to the county roads, and as a result it is hitting each of the taxpayers within each of the counties.
Are there any questions of the testifier?
Mr. Chair, I also have Jim Franklin, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Sheriffs, if he's in the audience.
No, he actually is in another area right now, and I have had conversations with Executive Director Franklin representing the Minnesota Sheriff Association, and we do have the support of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association with regards to this.
Okay. Did the other gentleman, are you a backup? Is that it? Or, okay.
Mr.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swells, if you've got more testimony, I can hold my question. Okay. I just wanted, Representative, could you walk me through the amendment? As I read the amendment, what you've done is taken out the application specific to Hennepin County, and it now is all counties. Am I correct in how I understand the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Swells.
Representative Reinert, that's correct.
Going to follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative or Sheriff, maybe you're the one who can better answer this. Are you hearing from, and I'm going to assume maybe this isn't a problem in Washington County, but in St. Louis County where I'm at, you know, we've had cities because of cuts in LGA that have disbanded their police department and put it back on the county to basically become their police department. Are you hearing that from your fellow sheriffs and these funds going back to the counties, would that assist that public safety burden?
Ms. Franklin?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm sorry I cannot speak to the other sheriffs of Washington County with regards to where the funds would go, but in speaking with my county administration, yes, the monies that any civil penalty that would result of the overweight would come back to the Washington County Sheriff's Office to assist us in this program.
Any further questions? Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this is for Representative Swales or staff, but tell me how the paragraph A and D work. Because in paragraph A, you say if the violation occurs in the county and the county attorney appears, then this is going to happen. And in D, you say if it was the arrest or apprehension is made by the county sheriff, then this is going to happen. So I don't know how they work together.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris probably can respond to that.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I can respond, but unfortunately I don't have an answer. I've looked into this question a little bit and talked to the court some and have not gotten a response. My read on it is that it's unclear, and there are a couple different ways of interpreting it, and I haven't found anybody in the agencies yet who can tell me how it's implemented in practice.
Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems like it's kind of redundant.
Beg your pardon?
D seems like it's redundant to A. I mean, if it happens in the county and the county attorney appears, then I'm assuming the 3/8 goes to the county and the 5/8 go to the Highway User Distribution Fund. And in D, if the sheriff does it, it goes to the general fund of that county and the rest goes to the Highway User Distribution Fund.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I would characterize it as that there are overlapping scenarios with those two paragraphs. Under A, that one would only kick in if the county attorney appeared in the action. So, you know, the county attorney would be involved in the civil suit. Under D, it would be an arrest by the sheriff. But there could be scenarios in which the sheriff performs the arrest and or the apprehension, the case, for instance, is referred to the Attorney General's office for disposition. And it could be that the apprehension is done by the state patrol, but the county attorney handles the civil case. So I don't think it's completely, I think it's overlapping, but not completely so.
Representative Holberg, you got it?
Well, I think that these things need to be worked out, and I don't know if there's a fiscal note for the statewide impact.
Yeah.
To the the highway user fund either, if it's a net gain or loss. It's too confusing. I can't even begin to tell. So I'd like to see a fiscal note once they figure out how paragraphs A and D, if they are in conflict or not.
Mrs. Urs, do you want to comment on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair and members, the fiscal note was written on the bill rather than the delete all amendments. So
it changes.
Mr. Chair, I think that there would be a number of changes with the delete all. First, since it includes all counties versus just Washington County, the fiscal note that we have before us notes just the costs related to Washington County, and the costs are related to the Attorney General and the Supreme Court. MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety did not note any costs related to the bill with just Washington County.
Representative Magnus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I understand it, the initial bill basically added Washington County to the provisions that apply to Hennepin County, where the county collects part of these fines. And the amendment basically opens up to all the counties. And Mr. Chairman and Representative Swales, I'd like to talk to my county sheriffs about this and some of the county folks. I'm not sure we want to that my counties want to go out as fundraisers for this sort of stuff. So I could have certainly supported your initial bill, Representative Swales, but going statewide, I've got four counties here, and I'm not sure I want to be putting those in that mix, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'll take the converse. I was less likely to be supportive when it was just Washington County, but when it's all counties, as I've mentioned, I know I've got a county where small cities are disbanding police departments and putting it back on the county. And up in St. Louis County, City of Duluth funds two-thirds of the county's operating budget. I guess my question is, I want to follow this through as we got the DE3 amendment.
That isn't before us yet, Representative Reinert.
Okay. Sorry.
Right.
Is there an intention to adopt that? If so, I'll wait to have my question.
I'll have to listen to the author, and I haven't called on him yet. If you're completed, I'll call on you.
Okay. I'll hold my thank you,
Representative Demmer, are you going to offer? I have one more question before you offer the amendment. I mean, one more person want to ask a question. Is that okay, or are you offering the amendment now?
No.
Oh, you have a question. Okay.
To this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I'm not dealing with the DE3 yet, and I'll just tell you quickly, I don't know if I will, because there's more information here that I'm learning as we go, and so I may or may not.
Okay.
But my comment and question actually is on the DE2.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. Mr. Burris, if I could ask you a question. In A, line 1.8 and 1.9, it says the remaining 5/8. Where does the first 3/8 go of that fine? In the violation occurs in the county, and the county attorney appears in the action, the remaining 5/8, where does the first 3/8 go?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe that the other 3/8 goes to the state's general fund.
Okay.
But I would caution that there are a couple of different ways in which this can be read, and I'd also like to apologize for a couple of comments earlier in shuffling amendments. I was reading current law, not the adopted DE2 amendment. I do believe that the DE2 amendment is clearer on how funds would be allocated if that became law. So that if the county sheriff did the apprehension, then 3/8 of the civil fine would go to that county.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's what was going to be my understanding, is that the difference between A and D is that three-eighths is going to the state general fund and 5/8 goes to the highway user tax fund. In D, 3/8 goes to the county and the other 5/8 goes to the highway user tax fund. I still think we may have an issue with jurisdiction, however, That's where the dollars go. But if a violation occurs in the county, well, maybe if it's the county sheriff. So if it's the county sheriff, that's what makes the distinction between general fund and tax and the county fund, Mr. Burris? Is that what you're thinking?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demery, yes. If the pivotal element with D would be whether the county sheriff did the apprehension or, you know, generated the civil fine.
Thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think I'm still finding myself confused, along with maybe Representative Holberg. I don't speak for you, but I'm still trying to figure out, Mr. Burris, what happens in the situation when the county attorney appears in a matter in which the county sheriff made the arrest.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, thank you for that question. That's that is a good one. I am of the opinion that the allocation would be 3/8 to the general revenue fund of the county because of the notwithstanding clause under the DE2 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's helpful to people. I'm sure you already recycled. I have House File 2848 that we talked about at the beginning. This is the Representative Swales's bill references in it 299D03 that talks about the disposition of the first part of the fines, and we just happen to have that section of statute in my House File 2848, so it tells you the sort of the beginning part of what happens before these changes are made. I don't know if that's helpful to you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holberg?
I don't know what...
Excuse me. Representative or Mr. Burris wanted to comment on that.
Mr. Chair, members, if you do take a look at that 299D, my read is that paragraph A would be what applies and not paragraph B, even though paragraph B goes towards weight violations. And this is based on a somewhat quick but a little bit of a review of the history behind when these provisions were enacted. At the time, paragraph B didn't exist. Just as long as we're digging into it.
Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know where this is actually going, but if you look at the fiscal note just for Washington County, and you look at the dollar amounts, while not huge in the case where we don't have any money, it makes a difference. And I don't know what proportionately land-wise or road-wise or whatever, but what this will look like as a statewide bill. I'm assuming those numbers are going to go up exponentially, so I don't know if that's...
Mr. Burris, does this bill have to go anywhere else other than finance? It goes state government, finance, and public safety. You're aware of that?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a ways to go.
Yes, Mr. Mr. Vanasek is here with some comments, if he can make them, about the process also.
Okay. Mr. Vanasek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Vanasek, and I represent the Minnesota Intercounty Association. We're an organization of 13 counties consisting of 5 in the metro area and 8 counties in greater Minnesota. When this bill came to our attention, that would provide the exception for Washington County. In addition to the current law exception for Hennepin County, our board of directors decided to take a position in support of a statewide application. Not only is there cost to the sheriffs for enforcement, but there is also the damage done to county roads when overweight vehicles are on them during the springtime, and so we think it makes sense to have that sharing of the fines apply statewide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Vanasek, Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair and Representative Vanasek, this may be a historical question. Do you think that this Hennepin County exception came from when the courts were run by the counties and it was never addressed as the state took over the court system? I mean, it just seems really odd why this is here, and that maybe it's time to just scrap the whole thing and figure out in situations like this who should get what percentage of the money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, my memory is a little foggy, but I think you're on the right track. My understanding is prior to the state takeover of the courts, the counties did receive a portion of the fines. And I'm not sure why Hennepin County, when or why they were given the one exemption that they have, but it may have had something to do when that state takeover took place. But I do believe, as I said, that the counties did once upon a time share in a portion of the fines.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you answered part of my question, where else this bill needed to go. I'm looking around, and I think Representative Severson and I are the only two that's also set on public safety finance, and I apologize if I'm missing somebody else. But there are certainly some public safety issues in here, and Representative Swales, just you might want to look at, we did a lot last year with administrative fees and fines, and this feels awfully similar. And in the end, we got some progress there, but you might want to just look at some of the pros and cons of, because it was a weighty discussion in public safety last year.
Thank you. Actually, Representative Swales, it definitely, I think we will recommend a financer re-refer to public safety finance. And I think we can probably conclude a lot of the discussion here because we're utilizing a lot of time. Any further questions of the author? Or the Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, I was going to offer an oral amendment. I'm not going to offer the DE3, but I was going to offer an oral amendment, unless you just want to not do anything with this and send it away and do something else. Are you going to be referred to another committee, Mr. Chair?
We're going to be referred to finance and public finance.
And I'd like to offer an oral amendment, if I may.
Okay.
Just
what's
for
your
discussion.
Oral amendment,
I would just like to strike paragraph D.
Of the amendment?
Of the amendment, D, of the DE2.
Paragraph D or B, dog or boy?
Paragraph D is in dog.
115.
Representative Demmer, would you want to explain your reason?
Yeah, so we'd strike what lines 115 through 119.
Representative Demmer moves to amend the DE2 amendment and strike 115 through 119. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did that for discussion. We'll work this through. Mr. Chair, my thinking here is I'm sensitive to the same thing that Representative Magnus talked about. We're putting in a situation here where these fines are being divided up based on jurisdiction, except in the case of the county sheriff, where we're saying, but if a county sheriff doesn't, we have another exception, and then we're distributing money back to either counties or whatever. Well, what my amendment would do, by eliminating paragraph D, we'd basically have A through C, and then we're down to, if my memory serves me, if a highway patrolman picks somebody up for an overweight on a trunk highway, 3/8, I believe, or a percentage goes to the general fund and a percentage goes to the trunk highway fund. However, if somebody, now I'm going to the exceptions, if a violation occurs in a county, and we don't say who picks them up, county sheriff, we don't say if it's deputy, whatever, but if it occurs in a county and the county attorney appears, then 3/8 will still go to the general fund, but then 5/8 now goes to the highway user tax distribution fund, so the county does benefit then. And in B, same sort of thing, the municipality, it's going to the highway user tax distribution fund, and then C, when the attorney general appears, it all goes to the tax distribution fund. I don't know why we do that, but that's what we're doing now. So basically what I'm doing, Mr. Chair, is saying if the county sheriff is involved, it doesn't make any difference. It's still controlled by A, B, or C, and it doesn't matter which officers picked them up. So that's my thinking, and I'll just throw that up for discussion.
Mr. Burris, do you want to comment? Do you need the notwithstanding or not? Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the removal of the new language and the striking of existing language on 1.15 and 1.19 would be standalone. That would be sufficient for an amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment as amended?
Mr. Chair, may I make a comment?
Oh, Representative Swales?
Mr. Chair, the only negative of that deletion would be then it doesn't do any benefit to our county, and that's why we were here. We were seeking some financial support. So.
Representative Beard?
Oh, Mr. Chair, referencing my remarks earlier about good policy as we enforce the law for the respect for the law, I'm thinking back to a Legislative Audit Commission report where we had some serious misbehavior with forfeiture, and I know that's a policy that's being discussed now, and some of the concern some of us have specifically to that, Mr. Chair, members, is anytime we impinge on the respect for the law or even give an appearance of a taint that there might be another motive, I think we do disrespect to the law and to the larger policy here. I know I'm looking at honorable men who serve us well, and I can see my own county attorney and my own sheriff in my mind's eye, and they're good people. But nonetheless, public, especially criminal or civil penalties being used to fund a department is something that gives this legislator great pause, and I'm having difficulty finding the will to support that. I guess I'll leave my comments at that. So I think I would speak in favor of the amendment that's in front of us now, and leave it at that.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, in terms of the amendment, I support the chair's discretion to send this to Public Safety Finance. I'd actually encourage the committee to leave paragraph D in. I think it's at the heart of what is sort of the policy issue here. And it is something we really delved into in the administrative fees and fines last year. You know, and for folks that are concerned that maybe it will go out of here with that intact and end up with a result that you're not looking for, you know, I would share that Chair Paymar was very much against the administrative fees and fines last year. So I just think leaving, you know, paragraph A and paragraph D are at the heart of how this becomes a public safety financing issue. So, you know, if we're sending it there for discussion, why don't we leave both parts there so that the committee can have a pretty in-depth discussion of that as well.
Any further comment or question? Now we have the amendment as amended before us. All in favor, say aye.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I mean, this. Oh, this your amendment.
I think we need to vote on my amendment to
That's
the amendment.
That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. Maybe I said it wrong. On the Demmer amendment, that might be easier. All in favor of the Demmer amendment to the, it's to the DE2 amendment. Say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
The amendment fails. And we have the rest of the bill. It's further comment?
No,
any
Mr.
questions?
Chair, but I do want you to know I am committed to continuing to work on this before the next committee.
Mr. Chair? Okay. I don't know who made the motion to move it, but I'm wondering if they'd amend it to move it without recommendation.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that, Representative Hobart.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't know who made the amendment on the bill to move it, recommended it pass, and it moved to finance, but I wonder if they'd entertain to move it without recommendation, given all the uncertainties about it.
Representative Swales, the motion would be to recommend it to the public finance. That's going to happen in there. Is that the way you want to make your final motion for passage?
Mr. Chair, I defer to the chair on that.
I presume that's the only way the bill is going to move.
No, she really wants to do it without recommendation.
Well, you're saying without recommendation, Representative Hobart. Is that what you're recommending?
Mr. Chair, I wasn't sure who made the motion, but I was. There's a lot of confusion around this. We don't have a good fiscal note. I don't even think we know exactly what this does. I, for one, would prefer to move it along without recommendation because I'm not even sure if this is a good idea.
I was looking at that. That might be an idea. We have another testifier, but we've had a lot of time on this bill, and it's going to a couple more committees, and I just as soon not use any more time. We've got some big bills coming.
I'm in agreement with you, Mr. Chairman.
If I think it's a reasonable solution of that we'd move to send it to the Public Finance Committee without recommendation. At least then you can address the issues.
Okay.
If that would be your motion, Representative Swales?
Motion is returned without recommendation, with a recommendation to be referred.
I'm getting some more information here. And I think I had it, but I'll read it so we get it right. That's correct. Representative Wells, your motion should be to move House File, whatever we got here, 3506, be returned to Finance with recommendations to be referred to the Public Safety Finance.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation.
As amended.
As amended, that's correct. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. That's the way it'll be.
That was good. That's
the way it's going to be.
So, let's see. Representative Hortman, are you ready?
I am, Mr. Chair.
You got that. Representative Hortman in House File 605. You have an amendment, Representative Hortman, too.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move that House File 605 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would first move the DE2 amendment that came in all of your packets.
Okay. Representative Hortman moves the DE, or brings DE2 amendment to bring the bill as she wants it. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay, the amendment's before us. That's a delete all amendment. Do you have another amendment, or is this
I do. Now that we've adopted the DE2 amendment, is my understanding we just adopted the
right.
DE2 amendment? Then the amendment that's being passed out modifies the DE2 amendment. It is the A-10-2401 amendment. We need to wait a minute for everybody to have it.
Do you want to explain the bill, or you want to move the amendment?
I'll move this amendment because this is a technical correction to the
okay. DE2. Representative Hortman moves the A-10-2401 amendment. Bring it before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, the amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll be working off of the DE2 amendment then. The Section 1 of the bill, just to remind you, we heard this before and we laid it over so that additional work could be done. And the purpose of the bill is to put into statute those things that must be put into statute to reform certain management practices at MnDOT that are changing in the environment following the bridge collapse in 2007. The Department of Transportation hired a consultant to do a management review. The legislature hired a consultant to do a management review, and the legislative auditor did a legislative audit in the fall of 2007. I think that was released in 2008. And so this bill is intended to respond to those suggestions. The commissioner has internally done some things, but there's some things that need to be changed in statute. So Section 1 would direct the department to look at doing additional research into bridge inspection and bridge bridge monitoring technology and bridge inspection technology, because if you recall, one of the issues we talked about following the collapse was some of the outdated bridge inspection techniques. We thought there were maybe some better things if we spent money on research. Section 2 is about this is deleted by the A-10-2401 amendment, but what it would have done is required some actions by counties and cities to prioritize projects, but we deleted Section 2 of the DE2 amendment, so we don't really need to talk about that. Section 3 is the legislature would be getting a report once every 2 years on the changes that have been made within MnDOT to upgrade their bridge inspection techniques. Every year they get different bridge inspection reports from internally and from consultants that they hire externally. They also do quality reviews, and they get information from the Federal Highway Administration. And this just says once every 2 years, tell the legislature what you have changed in your bridge inspection area
in response to this information, so that we are doing our job as a legislature in overseeing to make sure that we're supporting the department as they upgrade their efforts in that area. Section 4, this comes largely out of the legislative auditor's report, and this also kind of follows along the Holberg bill the other day, that when we fund transportation projects, we should be cognizant of the debt that we're taking on to fund projects, whether it's transit or whether it's roads, that we don't dedicate a whole bunch of our future revenues to paying down debt when we know we're going to have continuing maintenance costs. So Section 4 would require that the department develop a debt financing management policy. And everyone is familiar that we have that with regard to our state bonding bill, the general obligation bonds, and this would just take that and put it into the transportation context. Section 5 makes clear that one of the commissioner's primary responsibilities is to ensure the safety of our system. Ensuring the safety of our system is the number one priority of the existence of the Department of Transportation, but this specifically puts it in the commissioner's list of things that he or she has to do. Section 6 requires that one of the four positions at the top of the department is a professional engineer, and that that person will serve as the chief engineer. And that's to make sure that at any point in the future where there is a change in leadership and we may not have a professional engineer as both of our commissioner and our deputy commissioner, that there is somebody in one of those top four commissioners with the experience of an engineer to provide that level of input to the commissioner. Section 7 is a suggested section that we've added. Matt Burris has suggested this because all of the reports that I'm asking for, I'm asking to be electronically submitted to all the members of the committee, but the legislative reference library needs an actual physical copy. And so what this language does is make sure that whenever MnDOT is sending us over an electronic report, whether it's an email to everybody on the committee, that when required by other parts of Minnesota statute, they're also putting a physical copy in the legislative reference library. Section 8 is about the revision of the statewide multimodal transportation plan. What we're really concerned about is ensuring that the money that we spend in the transportation department funds our priorities. And so what this requests is that in future multimodal transportation plans, we identify performance targets and we show that the money that we're spending is linked to the goals and determines whether or not that money is accomplishing the goals. Section 9 is very similar, but it applies to the Highway 20-year capital investment plan. And again, the department has always done a very good job of putting together priorities and putting together the highway investment plan. What we haven't always done a good job of is linking the two to make sure that we're funding our priorities.
Any questions of the author?
Mr. Chair, I just have two more sections to identify. Section 10 is about putting a controller in place. And what a controller would do is a lot of what we're talking about here is making sure that the money that we say we're spending in certain areas actually is being spent in certain areas. And what the A10-2401 amendment did was make the standards for this the same as the standards we use over in MMB. And the last section is Section 11, and this is having the commissioner report to us the changes that they've made internally to to respond to the things that they've learned over the years of how we can do our inspections better in the bridge area in particular.
Representative Hortman, I see when you delete Section 2, that doesn't delete the provision that they have to, the county engineers have to submit a annual report, does it?
Mr. Chair, no, it just deletes my new language in that area. They still, before they get their funds for CASA and MSAS, submit reports to MnDOT. This just doesn't put any new obligations on them or change their existing obligations.
Any questions of the author? Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, to the A10-2401 amendment, I would recommend one technical change. That would be also to going against the DE2 on page 5, line 16, delete with.
I think we can accept that as a technical without voting it. Would you make that change, Mr. Brewer? You got that?
Mr. Chair, I would move the amendment suggested by Mr. Burke.
That was basically a technical change to
can we
with.
Just incorporate that?
Any further questions? Let's see. Representative Hortman, do you want to renew your motion that House File 605 as amended be returned to finance?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 605 recommend to pass and return to finance. As amended, is recommend to pass and return to finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we'll take care of the Representative Clark, do you want to? We aren't going to have much time, and we'd like to move you as quickly as we can. If not, we'll be moved out of this room pretty quick. And let's see what's your motion. I'll make that.
Well, that's going to be to lay on the table.
Representative Clark, my understanding that we'll bring the bill before us and lay it on the table.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And the reason for that is that the bill is not moving in the Senate anymore. So I would like to have at least an informational hearing. There's a lot of this passed through the last committee. And I want to make sure the members of this committee will have a chance to really understand what this bill does. So, Mr. Chairman, we'll...
I'll move that. My understanding, correct me again, it's, I'll move the bill that House File 1718 be before us and be laid on the table.
Okay.
That's your wishes.
Sure. Or laid over, laid on the table, whatever you want to do with it.
Okay. Representative Clark, now the testimony, we want to limit the testimony, and this is not going to be a whole, we don't have that much time.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be brief. We just have some important testimony, but it'll be brief. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the hearing and to indicate to committee members this is a relatively simple bill. Basically, what it does, it modifies the requirements for obtaining a driver's license in Minnesota so that a government ID, that is a secure government ID from another country, can meet the requirement of identifying the person who's applying for the driver's license. And it repeals the administrative rule that would require other sorts of identification. And I worked with Mr. Burris on this. And I want to say that there are four different states that do this type of this type of identification for driver's license, all with a little bit of different ways of doing it. And the issue that I would ask you to consider about this is that this is really a public safety issue. For example, in the state of New Mexico, where once they passed their provision to allow the driver's license to use a kind of alternative ID, their uninsured motorist rate dropped from the worst in the country, which was about 33%, down to 11%. So I just want to mention to people that's really the thrust of what we're trying to do here, and we have just some testimony, Mr. Chairman, to briefly describe why this is important.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name's Mark Anderson. I'm here as a concerned citizen, and I work on healthcare and human rights issues as a consultant, and I worked with Senator Paul Wellstone's office for 12 years and worked on immigration cases and issues of concern to the Latino community. That's where I became familiar with this issue. Let me just say that this organization, the group that's here today, Mujeres en Liderazgo, I think, an important organization that really represents their community, both here in the Twin Cities but also around the state. And there's a couple points that I think it's important for members to recognize. One is that the Latino community here in Minnesota makes an important contribution to economic development here. And so we really want to help them to be members of our community. Secondly, as Representative Clark mentioned, public safety is very important. And the concern that I have is that when we exclude people from our driver's license system, we're excluding them from our public safety system, and that really is endangering all of us. And then third, I just want to make the point that, you know, the immigration issues really should not be confused with driver's license issues. Immigration is a federal federal system, and the driver's license is a public safety system here in Minnesota. I really think this really makes sense for Minnesota. When we exclude people from the public safety system, that's really endangering all of us in our communities, because our public safety system is so important to all of us.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Susie Crothers, and I'm speaking for all those who can't speak for themselves. And if my parents couldn't drive, they wouldn't be able to come to my teacher conferences. I wouldn't be able to do any out-of-school activities. And I wouldn't be able to have parents supporting me at my choir or band concerts. I wouldn't be able to go over to my friends' houses like all of my other friends could. These kids can't be normal in America. Everyone is supposed to be equal. How can they be equal if some of them can't even have the right to drive? Thank you, Chairman Leader.
Thank you.
Thank you for all for being here today and working together with us to create a system that ensures a better equality of life for the people in Minnesota, many of whom are affected daily because their rights are not recognized. This proposal is to increase access to driver license will enable people to learn the rules of the road, will give access to car insurance, and cars can be registered in the owner's name. Accidents will be prevented because all drivers will have study for the taking the driver test. When accidents do occur, drivers will be held accountable and more likely to cover the cost of damage and injuries because they have access to insurance. The work of the police will be more efficient, and abuse and discrimination will be increased. This will increase the trust of the police, and community members will be more likely to report crimes and feel comfortable calling the police in the case of an emergency, which will also make our community more secure. The economy will also benefit because thousands of people will be paying fees for driving license, buying cars, car insurance, and titles, and will be able to gain access to more jobs because of transportation. The education of children will also be impacted with greater access to driver license. As budgets are tight, Minneapolis Public Schools are cutting funding for busing. This change unequally affects families without license, as they are less mobile and thus will have less access to the schools in their choice. This also affects participation in school conference, after-school programs, and other education activities offered by the schools. This is not a debate of immigration reform. This is about driving license for people living and working in our communities so that everyone living and driving in our state can be safe in our street. Minnesota laws are rules driving. Minnesota has laws and rules for driving. Let us have access to them, Representative. It is time to allow for a better equality of life for the whole community. We should ask ourselves today, do we want a Minnesota that values justice and equality? If your answer is yes, please support equal access driver license for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions of the testifiers? Or the Representative Clark, do you have some more comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I just would urge members to understand the importance of this issue and how it deeply does affect the lives of a whole portion of our population who contribute greatly to our community, to our economy, to our quality of life. And although I understand we won't be voting on this today, we will be back. And if there are questions that people have about this, any of the folks here would be glad to talk about it. I want to thank particularly Representative Holberg, who was working with me on understanding what some of the other states are doing. And we did talk with a division of driver's license, and we have more information, if people need it, about how other states are handling this in very similar ways. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unless there's any other questions, I greatly appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I think, you know, we learned a little bit about Utah, and they actually have two different driver's licenses. In other words, if you weren't able to prove your status or being a citizen or here on a visa or whatever, you're giving a different type of driver's license. Is that something that you think moving forward you could support? Or, I mean, there's so many issues around security, et cetera, and quite frankly, I think a lot of resistance given that the driver's license is used for more than just proving that you can drive and have insurance.
Representative Clark?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have the documents that tell how Utah, Hawaii, New Mexico, and Washington provide for this with other documents. And some of them have different types of driver's license, as you mentioned, in Utah. There's some that accept the individual tax identification number as proof. There's others that accept the passport or the particular card from the consulate. There are different opportunities like this. One of the things I want to point out in the bill, we do require in the bill that it be a secure form of identification. I worked with Mr. Burris on that. There are, I learned that the company that makes our Minnesota driver's licenses also is the same company that makes the identification from Mexico. And so they know how to do that security format there. And other states have similar kinds of security formats.
Further questions or comment? No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to just thank all the people who took off work today and came and want, you know, to hear this and let you know how strongly they feel about it. Thank you.
Thank you for all coming. House File 1718 will be laid on the table.
Okay, Chairman, Leader, you have a motion on House File 3576. I'm sorry, 3524. We'll lay this one over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation finance bill.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3524 for possible inclusion into the omnibus transportation finance bill.
And then I also understand, Mr. Chairman, that you have an A1 amendment?
That's correct.
Did you want to just brief us about that for a second, and then we'll incorporate it into your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay.
The A1 amendment really clarifies some of the language in the existing, in the bill and existing statute. And it's basically, if you look at it, it's basically a clarification which indicates that the commissioner shall not issue a plate based on certain circumstances.
Thank you. Is there a discussion to the A1 amendment to House File 3524? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, basically what we're trying to do in House File 3524 is clarify the statutes as far as special license plates. And if you look at the new language, you'll see there's it strikes out some of the old language and substitutes some new language. And if you go through Section 1, defines the special plates and deletes some old language, because we didn't need it all in that. Section 2 actually basically does the same thing. It defines what a new plate is, a proposed plate, and a special plate. and it shows the authorization and the sections where it would be. And section section 2 has quite a bit of language in it. If you look at it, it's clarification pretty much to the old statute, with the exception on some of the new language on subdivision 2A requires the commissioner to pretty much see if the special plate as proposed would meet the statute. That's kind of what's described in section 2A before it comes to the committee. Some of the other language, as far it deals with discontinuation of the plates, as far as if there aren't enough plates sold, and the other parts deal with in the bill deal again with deleting some of the references to the old statutes. But pretty much what it does, in effect, it strengthens the fact that there'll be some guidance as far as issuing a new plate. And if you look at the old language, there was actually language in there that's been in for about 8 or 10 years or more that indicates what they have to do to request a special plate, and that's old language. They had to show that many plates had to be sold. There was basically a cost element involved, and it also indicated what the commissioner's responsibilities were to do with the special plates. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And are there any questions to the author about the bill as amended in the testimony? And I understand, Mr. Chair, that there's really no additional testimony that you have.
Not unless the commissioner or the public safety wants to testify. I'm not aware of it.
Okay. All right. Is there any further discussion then to we also have a blank fiscal note for this? It's in your packet. So is there any further discussion then to House File 3524 as amended? Seeing none, Chairman Leader will renew his motion that House File 3524 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill for this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then we have one last bill on the agenda tonight, members, and that's another bill from the chairman. Okay, and this one actually, Mr. Chair, my understanding is you'd like to lay this on the table.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Okay. I just want to comment on the bill.
Okay, so
I'd just like to bring House File 3576 before us. I'd like to move that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chairman Leader moves that moves discussion of House File 3576.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason we discussed House File 3576, as you remember, in the past year there was some criticism of the governor when he took some monies basically and used it for transportation economic development. And I don't question that. I think it was a good thing to do because the governor didn't have much choice to do. There were three big projects specifically that he funded. One of them was like Elk Run, and one of them dealt with 169 and Bren. Is that it? Were there jobs involved? And another one was dealt with one of the medical or pharmaceutical communities. And he didn't have any monies available to participate basically in a public-private partnership or even for MnDOT to do some monies. And what he did is took some monies and actually found some monies and funded those projects, which again was a good thing. This bill would have established a fund so the governor could have had some monies to do it without getting all the criticism that he did, because when that happened, I think many of the members came to me and criticized why the governor took those monies and, in a sense, probably delayed some other programs. But that we were trying to address that problem, but by trying to address it in this bill, we would have taken monies which go to the petroleum tank cleanup fund there's a 2 cents trigger in a petroleum tank cleanup fund, which is basically a gasoline tax, which is used to clean up brownfields and anything dealing with petroleum and other products. And there's a kind of a problem with that. It's in the statute, the present statute, it's listed as a fee. We were going to use some of that, and based on discussions we've had with many, we think it's a little premature right now, and I've been meeting with the governor's staff. In fact, they were in this afternoon, and they certainly would like to see it happen, but I think it's probably a little premature with the funding mechanism. We don't have time to work it out any other different way, and the governor is hopeful we can somehow. But in the meantime, I just wanted to discuss the bill and lay it on the table.
Okay. Yeah. Members, are there any questions for the chairman? Yeah, Representative Beard.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, would you remind us, I'm looking, the fiscal note says nothing to the general fund or anything, but about if we left this blink on all year, about how much, remind us about how much money would accrue to this economic development fund? And to be correct, I believe this is considered a fee.
Initially, you would assume a 2 cent gas tax would bring in a little over $60 million, $62 million. But it isn't only on the gas tax; it's also on other fuels. It's also on aviation fuel, and on red diesel, and some of those. So really, that was the problem we had, because it spread on other fuels rather than gasoline tax. So in a sense, it's still collected as a 2 cents tax on gasoline or fuels, but it's used otherwise, and that was a little bit of the problem we had.
Yeah.
And that would I didn't answer your question. There would have been a difference with that new tax. When you spread it on the others, it probably a total tax would have came in around $70 million if it would have been all year.
Okay.
If it would have just strictly been on the gasoline tax, it would have been about 62.
Okay. Now I understand the problem that you're referring to. Yeah, and trying to quantify what it is on the other things, okay?
Yep.
And then, Mr. Chair, I'm sure that Mr. Krugman's going to testify in a moment, but remind us about how much is obligated to MPCA for the petroleum tank cleanup fund. Do you recall? Because I think that's the only other thing that the
roughly
required to do, isn't it?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, it varies, but in the last 5 years, the average for the petroleum tank cleanup fund ran close to $25 million. It wasn't quite an average. There were 2 years was down, but it runs around in a $25-26 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard.
Some of the money went to, I think Representative Deard is alluding to the fact, some went to PCA and some went to Deed under the present statute. Okay. And that's basically what was in the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Now, since we're laying this on the table, I don't know if there was, if you had wanted anyone else to, okay.
No.
All right. Is there any further discussion from the committee? Then in that case, Chairman Leader renews his motion that House File 3576 be laid on the table.
Right.
Done.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think there's no other bills before the committee, but we'll have to check on Tuesday what happens as far as the time and where it will be.
Ms. Rydick has mentioned that on Tuesday we'll just have to, everyone will have to look on the internet, watch for announcements on the floor on Monday, because we do not have a time and a place yet, most likely in the morning before session. So if you have early morning plans on Monday, maybe put those on hold. I think that's the sense I'm getting, is that we'll meet before session on Monday. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, if I may say, I presume the committee doesn't
I'm sorry, Tuesday.
Right.
Excuse me?
Mr. Chair, I presume the committee doesn't care to meet in evenings, so we're going to try it in the morning.
Is that, just very quickly, members.
Mr. Chair, just to comment to that, and I talked to the chairman about that, and, you know, when we get into these longer session days, you know, if we'd set a meeting up at 6 o'clock, we might not get there till 10 or 11 or something, and it's just kind of fruitless to do this until we can figure out get a handle on what's going to go on here. So I would encourage us not to go scheduling evening meetings if we could.
Okay. Well, Representative Holberg?
And Mr. Chair, is it the intent to just have one more meeting and wrap it all up, or two more?
Okay. Chairman Leader?
Two. Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the one meeting on bills, and the second one would be in the omnibus finance bill on Thursday.
Okay. So basically two more meetings next week, and then one, although it's not scheduled, is likely to be on Tuesday morning before session. And so just check the internet and the announcements and your email.
If we ever get it back.
Yeah. I understand there are some issues. So, okay. Well, if there's no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.